Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
All right. Welcome, seekers, to podcast number 83 of God Beyond the Bible, a podcast made by seekers and for seekers. We hope your week has been great so far. We know that this year has been challenging for each of us, definitely, in varying degrees around the planet. And if there's anything positive that we can say about the pandemic that has altered our lives for most of the year, it's that we're discovering that as humanity, we truly are all in this together.
Yes.
And if you're like us, you may be finding it increasingly difficult to discern fact from fiction. No doubt the truth seems to be subjective when it comes to what we're being told, as it is with any issue that falls into the trappings of politics. But I'll stop now.
Enough of that. Yeah.
All right. So our shout outs this week are to Paula Tomlins.
Okay.
And she's been listening to a lot of episodes, and we're glad to have her on board.
All right, awesome. Great. And quote of the week, you should sit in meditation for 20 minutes every day, unless you are too busy, and then you should sit for an hour.
I like
and
that.
And that's an old Zen adage there.
Yeah. Okay, so last episode we discussed heaven, and we're curious to know if our fellow seekers were as surprised as we were to find that though the word heaven is used almost 600 times in the Bible, there's very little clear context defining or describing heaven. And in true God Beyond the Bible tradition, we use both the Bible text and the thousands of near-death experiences to outline what we think heaven may be like based on personal testimonies of those who have been there and returned to testify.
And I have to say, I think it was probably one of my favorite episodes that we've done so far.
Oh, really? Okay.
So diving into segment one, today we've chosen to venture into the area of mental illness. Even if we personally, or no one we are close to, are victims of this silent suffering, and the thought of mental illness causes us to be a tad bit uncomfortable, well, then we need to pay attention too, because we have much to learn.
We sure do. Now, according to the APA, that's American Psychiatric Association, according to their webpage, which is psychiatrist.org, the definition and statistics surrounding mental illnesses are as follows, and this is quote, what is mental illness? Mental illnesses are health conditions involving changes in emotion, thinking, or behavior, or a combination of these. Mental illnesses are associated with distress and or problems functioning in social, work, or family activities.
And this is continuing on. Nearly one in five, 19% of U.S. adults experience some form of mental illness. Does that, I mean...
Well, it's like we've talked about. Is this the silent pandemic?
I think so. There are so many people, even that I've come in contact with, that I know they're suffering from a mental illness that don't even realize it themselves, that that's what sure. they're struggling right. with.
And, you know, keeping in mind that facts surrounding the current COVID crisis are very subjective, the best estimate that we can get on the percentage of Americans who have tested positive for COVID-19 is around or less than 1%. So if you use this for comparison purposes only, I mean, let's put those two numbers side by side.
Okay, and let's do that. In any given year, approximately 19% of the U.S. population suffers from some form of a mental illness, while the current well-publicized COVID pandemic has directly infected less than 1% of the population. And we are not trying to downplay the seriousness of the current virus. We're using it to point out a pandemic that goes on year after year, and for the most part, it's left unaddressed.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we continue with our reading from the APA's website, let's discuss just why we think it is that there is so much suffering from mental illness that seems to never get the kind of attention by the media, by leaders, or even the health organizations concerning this alarming statistic. What do y'all think?
I think it's because it's one of those illnesses you can't see. You have to really trust what people say more than anything. And I think that that's scary for people. You know, it's you don't understand a lot about it.
Well, and one of my favorite things, I had someone tell me, well, it's all in your head. Well, yes, duh, I know it is, but that doesn't make it not real.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think, and we're going to talk about that more, but I think our biggest problem is that even though we call it illness, we don't treat it like illness. I don't think the institutions, the medical institution, just the straight medical general practitioner, I know they know the seriousness of it, but I think they're just ill-equipped. I mean, let's just be honest with you. Our answer to everything, and we'll talk about that, is just medication.
Yes.
Just mm-hmm. more medication, you know, and because that's all doctors are trained to do. But we know that psychiatric problems go much deeper than just take a pill.
And when dealing with it, you really have to be your own advocate, because everyone has, even doctors have their own personal opinions about mm-hmm. it. And so if they're kind of don't understand it, don't believe in mm-hmm. it, they're going to be really hesitant to help you.
Right.
So, okay, but let's get back to our post that was on psychiatrydoc.org. As we said, nearly 1 in 5 or 19% of U.S. adults experience some form of mental illness. 1 in 24, that's 4.1%, has a serious mental illness, and 1 in 12, 8.5%, has a diagnosable substance use disorder. And that was a lot lower than I expected. I wonder if that's the 1 in 12 having some kind of
substance. Now, well, we're going to talk about that, but they didn't say substance abuse.
Right.
They said substance use disorder. That was their quote.
A substance use disorder. I had to look this up because I was curious of what the difference
is. Yeah, I made a stab at it, but I didn't look up to see exactly what it was.
A substance use disorder is defined as the use of any addictive substance that causes serious health issues or serious problems with work and relationships. So we're talking about non-functional, you know, addiction to the point of being not functional in society.
So worse than just abusing.
Yes.
Okay. I gotcha.
Okay. So let's talk about those last two statistics.
Which were 1 in 24, serious mental illness, 1 in 12 has a diagnosable substance use disorder.
Mm-hmm. And while the website, you know, didn't readily break down what their definition of serious mental illness is, we're to assume by definition that these are the folks who have serious difficulty functioning in daily activities and relationships. And again, that is 4.1% compared to less than 1% that have been diagnosed with corona.
And we're not ragging on the corona or saying it's not real or that it's not important. We're just trying to use some comparison to how we react.
As serious as the corona is, this is more
equally and four times is more likely, four times more people each year struggle with this. So what are we to make of the 8.5% statistic of the population that has a diagnosable substance use disorder? Now, as I said, they didn't say substance abuse.
Right.
And Tracing kind of cleared that up. But they may tend to, I thought maybe they tended to use, you know, overuse prescribed medications as well as alcohol and maybe other drugs.
Well, and it's proven in the opioid epidemic that that's where a lot of addiction starts is with.
Well, there are those who believe the addiction factor is always connected to mental health issues because of our tendency to self-medicate.
Sure.
I mean, that's what a lot I've observed people with mental health issues, and almost all of them get into some kind of drug use.
Yeah.
Almost all, I mean, serious. I'm not talking about just take a drink of wine or a little alcohol here and there. I mean, often it gets, and then that line gets blurred. Is it a mental illness that's causing this or the abuse disorder? But we're going to talk about that.
So according to the website, mental health involves effective functioning in daily activities such as productive activities, including work, school, caregiving, etc., being able to maintain healthy relationships, and the ability to adapt to change and cope with adversity.
Boy, I'm bad at those.
Well, I know all of these now. I've always been able to, with my issues of anxiety and depression and stuff like that, I've always been able to function and maintain, like, my school and
work.
All of that stuff. Maintaining healthy relationships is a little harder.
Yes, and especially because I have that social battery, that the more I'm around people, the more my battery drains, and I need that alone time to recharge
I was thinking battery in the physical sense. Like, I have that social, like, you beat people.
Depends on the day.
Okay, and what about that ability to adapt to change and cope with adversity?
I hate change. I actually, I've told, you guys know this, but I actually designed my living room in my house so that it can never be changed.
Well, yeah.
So that the furniture would always have to be in the exact same spot, and you would never have to, because I really dislike change.
And I don't really have trouble with that. I'll be honest with you. I like change.
I do too. I mean, we're in the middle of, like, rearranging our whole
I'm in another construction deal, right? In the middle of another construction thing.
But
too.
I also like it to be on my terms. I don't like to be necessarily surprised.
We don't want to be forced to change. Yes. Well, I'm going to have to. And I think that's been, don't you think that in this COVID thing that, probably there's a lot of stress on people that are suffering from mental disorders, mental illnesses. And, you know, we're even hesitant to say that, but that's what it is. Until we start calling it illness and really treating it like illness, people are not, it seriously as illness. And don't you think that probably now there's a lot of folks that aren't getting treatment?
Oh, absolutely.
That are really that are really having lots of trouble coping with all the change and,
even
the stress and all that
myself
stuff.
Myself being on medication, it has changed my routines to the point that it's caused some serious discomfort.
Right. Yeah.
So study actually continues. Mental illness does not discriminate. It can affect anyone, regardless of your age, gender, geography, income, social status, race or ethnicity, religion or spirituality, sexual orientation, background, or other aspect of cultural identity. While mental illness can occur at any age, 3/4, or about 75%, of all mental illness begins by age 24, and I can vouch for that.
Well, but
I really think
I'm gonna call foul. I'm gonna say I disagree with their deal that it begins at that age. I think that's where we get to the place that the pressures in life are at the place that we say, okay, I'm not functioning here, because
you're right.
I don't think this was a brief overview.
Right.
They may not have meant for it to sound like that, but you know, it's like, okay, you turn 24 and suddenly you've got a mental illness.
But you can look back, like, I know myself, I can look back to when I was a kid and see that I exhibited those.
Sure. And it just progressed as time went on. And that's something that, you know, you go through a lot of changes between, like, the age of 17 and 25. Yeah. You're coming of age, you're graduating school, you're finding new friends, maybe you're going to college, getting a job, choosing a career, getting a house, and a lot of times people are getting married or into serious relationships.
Having children, yeah.
And everything sort of compounds on you. So all of those stressors that you saw when you were a kid are all of a sudden exploding around you. And that's kind of, I know what happened with mine as I went through getting married and building onto a house and our work life
moving out.
Yeah, moving out on my own. Yeah. And everything just kind of blew up at once.
Well, let's keep in mind that we are not, we ask everyone to keep in mind that we're not mental health professionals by any means. And mental health issues are too complex to discuss every aspect, and even if we knew about it in our limited time. But just please seek professional help if you're struggling with even mild mental illness. According to the website, and I agree with this, unaddressed and untreated mental illness rarely, if ever, gets better, and almost always gets worse with age and time. And so, with that thought, we'll pause, we'll regroup, we'll turn to part 2.
All right, seekers, today we are discussing mental illness. And in the first part of this episode, we took some statistics. Statistics from the ADA's published findings, and we compared them to the number of folks testing positive for corona. And the numbers show that a person is almost 20 times more likely to suffer from a diagnosable mental illness or disorder than contract the virus that has clearly been categorized as pandemic.
So in this segment, let's talk about the number one reason folks don't seek professional help addressing their mental or emotional disorders. And that number one reason is the stigma that is associated with mental illness. Why are we so embarrassed to admit that we're having serious difficulty being productive and functioning normally in areas like work, school, caregiving, maintaining relationships, adapting to change, and coping with adversity?
Well, I think I can answer that because I think most parents, a lot of times, and we're going to talk about the genetics and stuff involved, but a lot of times, too, maybe a young person growing up, they don't see that in their parent. Their parent keeps it hidden. They don't see, you know, they see some symptoms maybe in their parents. Maybe they see a lot of too much alcohol use. They see stress in the marriage, all that stuff, but it's never really brought you up. Well, okay, mom and dad's fine, so why am I having this trouble? Why am I having trouble, you know, doing this? And really, mom and dad usually aren't fine.
It's a struggle for me, you know, that I don't want to be, I will just say, I don't want to be crazy. I don't want people to tell me that, well, you know, she's that way. I mean, I am a little bit.
My grandkids say Papa's crazy all the time. Right. Don't bother me. I wear it like a badge.
It's hard because you feel like people are going to like group you into this. Well, she has issues. When the truth is, I really do have issues.
Do you know anybody that doesn't?
That's right.
Yes.
If you're around them very much.
That's it right there.
I'm not saying everyone, but the people that have the well-rounded, in harmony, coping skills when they reach adulthood, I think are very few.
It is, and that's part of what we don't want to acknowledge, too, and we get into that farther into this episode, is it's all about your coping skills and, you know, learning to deal with things. And Tavi's children are very blessed because from a young age, she's kind of been able to take the, I wish someone would have known to tell me this.
Mm-hmm. Which I've tried to with you girls, do with you girls, considering these issues. And even pointed out to you in our ancestry.
This is something that's been passed down.
A little bit from both sides of the family. Based on our personal observations and experience, we here at God Beyond the Bible have compiled a short list of reasons we think there is such a powerful stigma attached to mental illness.
So comparing mental illness to physical illnesses, do you think that mental illness gets so much less serious attention and research because as a society, we still don't really classify it as a true illness? I mean, in other words, subconsciously, we think mental illness is somehow self-inflicted or is a creation of the person suffering.
Well, don't we kind of send that idea across when we say things like, well, you just need to cheer up. You just have to shed that anxiety and stop worrying about it. Well, if I could stop worrying about it, that would be great.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
And it's like we're surprised. I remember, and it's been years ago, but when Robin Williams died, famous person, and he...
Hasn't it just been a couple years?
Everything kind of runs
together. I think that
was like
6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, was it really? Okay.
But you know,
everything's a couple years.
A funny guy, comedian... And everyone was so shocked and surprised. And I'm telling you, the people...
This silent suffering that he was doing. Yeah.
And it's so sad. And then it's like all of a sudden everyone is really on fire and they're aware of it for a little while. And then it just fades back into the
background. Until the next high notoriety person takes their own life or really loses their life to this disease. I mean, because that's what it is.
I think you're B. Tracy.
Do you think that the fact that many, if not most, insurances don't cover the diagnosis and treatment of mental illness actually sends a subliminal message that it really isn't a true illness?
I do. And I was doing a little bit of research. I didn't realize that, like, up until early 2000s is when they first started actually passing mandates, federal mandates, that insurance had to cover if they chose to cover mental illness. Because what they were doing is you still don't have to, they don't have to offer the coverage, but if they do, they were having higher deductibles and higher co-pays if you went to a therapist or any kind of mental. But I just
making it tough, you know, tough for people to get the treatment that they need to get. And I want to be honest with you. I mean, if you're going to go through and you say, okay, I've got to, this is serious enough, I need to do something about this. Usually the first thing, you have to go to your general practitioner. Usually, I mean, you can't just go, I don't know, can you? I mean, you can't just go.
Usually for typically with insurance.
I'm going to say, you have to have a referral. You have to have a referral, you know. And some, and I love, we've got some great doctors, but some of those are reluctant. You know, they want to treat you. Most of them want to.
I can give you this pill that'll make you feel better.
Yeah, I'm going to treat you. And let's try this and let's try that. And sometimes, you know, it may be only you know how serious this thing
really. You have to self-advocate. You have to be an advocate for yourself.
For a lot of people, medication works.
But for, I am one of those people.
But for a lot of people, it takes a lot of years to get a medication that does work.
And sometimes, I was one of those people.
And often it's a combination of medications before you ever get something that really works.
And you know, in all the time that I went to doctors, because mine really blew up after I had my first child, postpartum hit me hard, and I went, and it took me 12 years probably of different doctors
lined out,
to find. And you have to, I went to doctors.
And some life changes, attitude changes, life attitude
and
changes.
And we're going to, we'll get into that. But one of, I remember there was a doctor that I went to, and he asked me, when I told him, and I was in tears and I was talking to him, and he said, well, do you pray? Have you thought about praying about it? Have you thought about, and I was kind of hurt. I was like, you know, are you a Christian?
That was the first,
that
was the first thing I did.
Yeah. You know, but I think it's.
C is tracing, I think.
Am I C?
Yeah, I think so.
Even in cases where a person may have an insurance through their employer that does cover certain aspects of diagnosis and treatment of mental illnesses, do y'all think that people might be reluctant to seek treatment because they fear backlash, such as being passed over for a promotion or even loss of employment if they're found to be diagnosed with a mental disorder?
I think that would probably be a real concern.
I will tell you this. When I went to see the therapist when I was a teenager, and one of the things they said is, we do not diagnose mental disorders here because that could prevent you from ever having a job in your life.
You would
I don't know. I just, you know, it's kind of, well, let's address the elephant in the room. In the New Testament, the few glimpses of people demonstrating signs of extreme mental illness are portrayed in the narrative as people spiritually afflicted by demons. Now, has this caused us to be conflicted as to how to address mental illness? I mean, Tabby just said, yeah, well, you need to pray, you know. It's a spiritual.
It's a spiritual.
It's a spiritual issue. Now, even though many of the physical illnesses people suffered from, talking about in the Bible, were approached as being afflictions of spiritual origin too. Did you ever look at that?
That's true.
And, you know, and I don't understand. And to mental illness, I don't know why. I guess they just think if you prayed about it, gave it to God. But, you know, I did that. And God led me to a doctor who could help me.
But let me ask you, this. Do we, will we do the same thing if you have heart disease or cancer?
Nope.
Just pray about it. Pray about it, and you need to just pray. So, see what I'm talking about?
I do.
There is a hypocrisy here.
Yes.
All we're trying to do today is just get a discussion, and you know, maybe encourage someone to have open discussion with someone they think, if it's themselves or somebody they think is silently suffering, they get a sometimes just an open discussion will go a long ways.
So just over 100 years ago, people demonstrating signs of mental illness were institutionalized, and barbaric practices such as electrocution and drilling holes in patients' heads and sucking out portions of their brain matter were really common treatments. And during this dark period, people of wealth and influence could pretty much have any person they wanted institutionalized and subjected to these experiments, which are considered, I mean, most barbaric by modern terms.
Well, sure, by any terms.
And I remember reading, I read a book, and it was one I found on Kindle for free, but it was a memoir of a lady who grew up in the, well, she became a wife and a mother in the 60s, I think. And I don't know how it was then, but she was institutionalized. And mm-hmm. She kind of was bipolar and had some schizophrenia mm-hmm. in there that went so many years undiagnosed of her having kids and being in and out of the hospital and them doing just crazy things.
Yeah.
It was sad. I mean, to read.
And, you know, they just, well, she has this hysterical disorder.
Let me go ahead and say, I think there's probably people in the mental health, psychiatric, psychology, all of this that are probably making some strides and do it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're getting the attention or the airtime or the promotion or even the money
right.
that it takes to research this thing. Look at the billions, mm-hmm. the trillions that we've spent on this virus.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I did see, I was watching TV the other day and a public service announcement came on, and I think it was Michael Phelps, the swimmer, and he was speaking about mental health issues. And if yes. during this pandemic you have had trouble and you've had issues, go see someone. There is no shame. And I was kind of happy to see something
and
like
you know
that.
I love seeing they have apps out now for your smart device, or you can mm-hmm. do it online or on a computer or whatever, and you can actually video chat with a therapist, and you can have weekly meetings and never have to leave your house as far as yeah. you know, going into an office if you're in a place where maybe you can't find one close
but
by.
Again, there's not a lot of airtime letting people know that they have that access.
Exactly.
They have that ability.
And I want to tell you just from personal experience, it doesn't help to watch Frasier.
It doesn't help at all.
It's not. You remember they were both psychiatrists, yes, you yes, know, yes. Frasier and Niles.
And very dysfunctional.
Oh, my gosh. I never saw any more dysfunctional bunch than that bunch yeah. was. I guess that's what made it funny. But, I mean, but they really didn't laugh about mental illness. I don't think they were making fun. I think maybe, you know, in some small way, the show made it more real, you
yeah.
know.
Well, it kind of opened up a dialogue of, mm-hmm. oh, I deal with that. You know, yeah. obviously not to the television hilarity degree that right. some of the people did, but you go, oh,
well, let's look.
Let's look
at the other thing. You know, they always joked about, and you get paid $75. And when you say that to a lot of people, $75 an hour for mm-hmm. to talk to someone, that's a little.
You know,
that's what some of us make in a day.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a feeling that therapists hear some things that could probably haunt them at times.
Oh,
you know,
oh,
just having that.
Well, they probably do. Tracen, I think you're F.
I am. So some believe that, you know, the experimentation and the institutionalization had a twofold negative impact on the mental health issue. First, it added an additional layer of stigma, because when someone had a family member in an institution, it was kept a secret.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the person suffering might rarely, if ever, have any contact with their own family. And the second way that it has impacted the mental health issue is that in an effort to prevent people from being cast into institutions on the whims of influential people for various reasons, strict laws protecting the rights of all people with mental health issues have been passed, and this makes it nearly impossible in this modern age for families to seek any kind of involuntary treatment for even the most severe cases of mental illness. In fact, it's only in the most extreme cases, usually after a person suffering from mental illness has committed an act of extreme violence against a family member or another member of society, is voluntary treatment ordered by a judge.
Yeah, involuntary, right, yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's what you said, yeah. So in these extreme cases where untreated mental illness results in violence against the family or society, it's a hellish nightmare that never ends.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Without going into too much detail, we have a case in our local area where a family member killed his mother and father, one or both of his grandparents, I can't really remember, and was waiting, I don't want to be too specific anyway,
wow.
and was waiting to kill his two younger siblings, which was narrowly averted by, for lack of words, the hand of fate. This occurred more than 50 years ago. The man still institutionalized, but with every correspondence, or most of the correspondence that he has with his two living siblings, he reinforces his intent to finish the job if he ever gets out. Now, unfortunately, every few years, the siblings must relive the nightmare whenever the older brother comes up for review and possible release. And you guys know who I'm talking
it
about.
It is,
yes.
And that's
yes.
so
and
sad.
It's sad. Because Tabitha knows the daughter
yeah.
pretty well, and I know the son.
Mm-hmm.
pretty well. That was left. That's all the family, I think, that was left.
I think so.
Well, and they have to suffer through.
And they were kids in school.
Yes.
They have to suffer through, you know, that constant fear of what if they're released or what if they escape? What if they get out? What if they're... Yeah.
And plus the fact that they were kids and had to live just through that.
The trauma.
That trauma. Yeah.
Losing everyone.
Yeah. So families of people who are mentally ill and refuse to seek treatment are left feeling helpless and frustrated. When they are able to use the complicated court system to order involuntary treatment, it's usually a very, very short-term fix.
Yes.
Yes.
And as soon as the patient demonstrates signs of improvement, they're released, where they often abandon all treatment and relapse into a deeper state of altered reality. And we, sitting here at this table, recording this episode, we know this vicious cycle all too well.
Yes, we do.
Yes, I mean, and I've made it no secret. I've got an older brother that suffers from severe mental illness. Now he's in his 60s, it's just heartbreaking to see him the way he's living his life, but it's also heartbreaking that, and what we've run into is there'll be usually a judge with good intentions say, I think other stuff's going on here. We're going to have you evaluated. And especially during this time right now that we're in where you're not seeing doctors or anything, it usually results in a phone call from someone appointed by the court or someone to do an evaluation, and they'll ask them, well, do you feel like hurting yourself or feel like hurting someone else? And if they say no,
right,
the evaluation is pretty well over. And like I said, we could go for months on this because I have a lifetime of experience with even severe cases, and it's just a terrible, terrible thing that I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know as a society what we're going to do.
I don't either. So with that said, allow us to pause and regroup, and we'll return with part 3.
And welcome to part 3 of episode 83 of God Beyond the Bible. Today's episode may just be the single most important topic in need of being addressed in our modern age. It is the topic of mental illness. We find that this topic is so complex and emotionally charged that when it is discussed, we don't even like to call it mental illness. We prefer to call it discussing mental health. Well, until we address it as what it is, a true illness, that is much harder to diagnose and treat than any physical illness that has been scientifically researched and generally is not associated with the social stigma of mental illness.
Yeah. And that's not to say medical research hasn't made great strides in trying to understand, diagnose, and treat mental illness. Unfortunately, however, as prominent as it is, it never seems to rise to the top of the list of prominence of needful scientific study that it receives the kind of critical research and financial support that it would require to effectively address the issue.
And we here at God Beyond the Bible believe the first step to addressing this silent pandemic is dialogue. True, open, frank, uncomfortable dialogue. We need more open discussion on the floor of Congress, in the classroom, from the pulpit, and around the dinner table. Only honest, open, non-judgmental dialogue will lead to a paradigm shift in our approach to mental illness. We must first lift the veil of the dark stigma associated with this issue. We must stop approaching mental therapy as pseudo-medical science. Mm-hmm. Not so much in the scientific community, who take it very seriously, but in the cultural, social, and even the religious community, where the reluctance to address the issue stifles scientific progress.
And I truly think the religious community is one of the worst, in my personal opinion, as far as recognizing.
Well, we're just not equipped. I mean, where do you go to the Bible? You know, if all you're going to use is the Bible,
right?
Where do you go to the Bible to get this answer?
Yeah,
cast out the demon.
That's what I'm saying. Well, in the first segment, we read the APA statement that most mental illnesses become apparent. Now, I'm going to put that was my word, by the age of 24. Our experience, along with much scientific data, has been that there are very clear indicators of disorders at much earlier ages that, due to lack of open dialogue and understanding, go unaddressed and develop into full-blown mental crisis. Some think it may be that we often diagnose early signs of mental illness as a developmental or learning handicap. Do you think that's...
I do. We use kind of softer words, especially in smaller children. He has separation anxiety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He has anxiety.
Yeah.
I mean, use the last word there. It's an anxiousness. It's anxiety. And these things can build as you get older if you don't learn how to cope with it.
Again, if there's not, and I don't think we have a lot of that. I know the schools do the best they can, and I know they have people who are counselors and all of this thing, but I don't really think even in the schools there's any real, because, you know, that's a touchy issue, and then you're dealing with underage children, you're dealing with people who aren't adults, and you have, there's so much privacy, there's so many privacy issues floating around this, it's just impossible. We can get a medication and get him diagnosed with a learning disability. But we're not, and maybe I don't understand. I'm sure I don't understand a lot about it, and maybe it's just very difficult. But I've watched it through the years, and the signs are clearly there when they're young.
Oh yeah,
the signs are clearly there when they're young.
Okay, do y'all agree or disagree?
I disagree. No,
with this statement that I'm fixing to say, we are a society that is highly focused on treating symptoms, and we struggle when it comes to treating causes.
I think that's true.
I agree.
I mean, this seems to be the standard when it comes to any illness, physical or mental.
Let me ask you a question. Any of the thousands of disease commercials that you see on TV, have you ever heard one say that it was a curable disease or a treatable?
No, yeah. It's treatable. This is to treat your moderate to severe. This is to treat your... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you notice that in the opening statements that we read from the APA's website of the three categories of symptoms of mental illness, the third was addiction. And we mentioned that many people with mental afflictions often self-medicate, alcohol usually being the most prominent method. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how much time and resources are expended on treating addictions, which most professionals agree is symptomatic of much more complex issues such as mental illness. Yet we think we've solved the problem if we can help the person beat the addiction. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we may have treated a serious symptom, yet the cause goes unaddressed for the most part. And I've got to say, people will tell you that addiction is not a disease, it's a choice. But I think it stems from this mental illness disease
seeking to self-medicate.
And so to say that there's a choice, I don't always know that there is.
I think
that's really playing it off as, just like we do with mental illness, they just need to get over it.
And I know in this area, and I'm glad that we do, but in this area there have been rehab centers sprung up.
Yeah,
everywhere. Yes.
And they wouldn't be here everywhere if there wasn't a problem.
Yeah, but there again, we treat those people as far as to help them beat the addiction, but the underlying, I'm wondering if we're doing anything to address the underlying.
What brought you here? What brought you into this
addiction? To the addiction to begin with,
And I think there are some very reputable rehab centers that are about that. They're about the therapy, finding out why.
But those are usually the most expensive that you pay to get into. These we're talking about here locally that we have, and there's a dozen of them just within, not too far from here, within 50-mile radius. I'm just throwing that out there. But they're all voluntary. Yes. They're not really trained professionals. They lean toward more the spiritual. Mm-hmm. They're church funded and things like that. So naturally there's a fundamental spiritual thing, religious thing behind it. And there again, I'm just going to go ahead and throw out there, I don't think the religious community is equipped or even has really given any real thought due to the stigma of the demonic thing. I don't think the church, I don't think the religious institutions are really comfortable, or even maybe we don't even know how to go about talking about this.
No. Well, you look at a psychologist or a psychiatrist who spends 10 to 15 years in school learning about these disorders and how to treat and what can cause them, and I'm not equipped off the street to help you overcome a lifetime of issues. I can't even overcome some of my own.
Tabitha, are you six?
That would be me. We may observe the same approach when it comes to physical illnesses. Most of the medications we take are created to treat the symptoms of a more complex physical issue. And let's be honest, this treat-the-symptom approach is primarily driven by the potential for big profits by the pharmaceutical community. Mm-hmm. When it comes to medical research and development being motivated by the potential for massive wealth being accrued by long-term use of a symptom-treating drug, there may not be a real inspiration to seek out a cure. Fair or unfair statement?
Very fair. I think they do that with a lot
money,
of stuff.
Money drives the world.
It does.
Profits, well, and money. And sometimes I think we get confused. We see these medical big pharma companies. We see them as, well, they're really trying. And they are trying to do a good thing. But they're only going to do it for a profit. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do it at a loss. They're not going to do it at a break even. They're not going to do it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's business. It's big business. That's what business does, is makes money.
Let me throw this out there. For their investors. Mm-hmm. We've seen recently they've had commercials on TV for a Hep C cure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you guys know that it's been around for about 20 years and it's been available for about 50 cents a pill in other countries, but here you're going to pay nearly $300 a pill?
And so those,
and it's not a treatment, it's the actual
cure. It's a cure.
Yeah. And this is what's wrong with, you know, and yes. And you know, but we don't want to get into, you know, it could easily fall into politics, but as yes. we said earlier, anything that falls into politics, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and money, big money, large money. We only make this observation because this approach to treating symptoms of mental illness with drugs developed by profit-driven pharmaceutical companies may be our only avenue of treatment, but it does little to encourage the research for treating the cause. The research that has been done has revealed a myriad of possible causes that involve, you know, deficiencies in diet, yes. The intake of vitamins. Maybe we're not getting trace minerals that we need. Chemical and hormonal imbalance, and not the least of these factors, the role that genetics plays in our early developmental, you know, along with our early developmental environment, that may or may not be a cause in itself, but may serve to exacerbate an unaddressed illness. In other words, I kind of think that. You know, we blame, well, that's the way he was raised.
So we're going back to nature versus nurture.
Yeah,
I guess this something that's physically within you, or is it something that's brought about by where you come from?
Yeah. Have you guys got anything else before we conclude here? Okay. Well, I look like I drew the conclusion, too, since I kind of wrote some personal notes in there. But like many of our topics, we could dedicate untold episodes to the issue and impact of mental illness on those of us who suffer personally from these complex disorders and illnesses, not to mention the impact on the families of those who are victims of extreme cases of mm-hmm. mental illnesses. We know all too well the frustration and feelings of shame and embarrassment associated with the stigma of mental illness, not to mention the often helpless and hopeless feeling when trying to get treatment for someone we love who refuses critically needed treatment. Yes. And let me just go ahead and say that here. I'm going to just throw this in. That's the amazing thing. That's the thing that people don't understand about me. Well, there's treatment available. Yes. But if you have a broken arm, if I fall here and break my arm, first thing you guys are going to do is you're going to take me to the doctor, and I'm going to willingly go in and say, hey, doc, I think I broke. You know, we're going to go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
And in our case up here in the rural, they're liable to put me on a helicopter if I don't right. do it. But anyway, you know, and there's no question. Do you want us to help you with your broke arm? Yes, please help me. Mental illness is not that way.
Yeah. And, you know, and two, going to an ER, they cannot refuse you treatment for physical. So if the money's not there to pay, mm-hmm. they still have to treat you.
Not
I
so.
Guess if you went up there and said you were depressed, there's really not.
And
seriously.
And we do see those things in my involvement in a few years in the first responder medical thing. Uh-huh. There were many issues that were like that, and the people were having mental breakdowns mm-hmm. and stuff. And usually just take them to the hospital, and, well, you need to see Dr. So-and-so. And
there was nothing done.
There's nothing. You know, and they're not, it's not, we're not knocking the hospital. They're not equipped for this.
That's right.
They're equipped for your broken arm and your exactly. high fever.
It's not the nurse and the doctor that are there trying to treat you.
No.
They don't have the tools.
Exactly.
Well, we hope that this small contribution we make in the form of this podcast might be an encouragement to those who are encountering mental illness in their lives. And now, our own experience has taught us the immense benefit of openly discussing our challenging dilemma. And I have personally done too many funerals of friends and family whose quality of life and ultimately death was a direct result of mental illness. I began several years ago to speak openly from the pulpit. And when speaking at funerals and memorials on behalf of those who spent their entire life struggling with the crippling and debilitating effects of this enemy of peace and happiness, I discovered that the families were so blessed and relieved when I spoke of their past loved ones' struggles in light of my own experiences. After all, families still carry the guilt of feeling like they should have or could have done more to help their suffering loved one. It is time for the millions of us who are victims of this silent pandemic to join together in support of one another and to do all we can to leave the next generation with, at the very least, an avenue of open dialogue when it comes to this issue, and the church included.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe especially the church.
All right. As always, may God's unconditional grace, peace, and love be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.